You're listening to Face Off, episode 63, recorded April 4th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com.
So what do we got this week?
All right, well, we actually have a follow-up from episode 20, where we were talking about Clicktail and some of these other sort of analytics programs out there. And you found that there is a product called ClickHeat.
Yeah, so we talked about Clicktail, where you can, you know, it's a little bit different than the analytics. It doesn't just show you the data, where you can actually see what where people are clicking, and you can actually watch their mouse movements.
Like,
it's kind of cool stuff. What ClickHeat does is give you kind of one of those fancy-dancy, you know, what you see in some of these blog posts, where you get these colors where people are kind of clicking around on the screen. Mm. You know, obviously, it's kind of like a heat map, you know, like where the least amount of clicks will be like a bluish kind of cold looking color, and then the more clicks will be more of a greenish onto yellow, and then the most, you know, red,
like red and white, because it's hot.
What I like about it is this is totally open source, open free, everything. You can download it, you can install it. It comes with the JavaScript, the PHP, and how to set it up with MySQL, so it keeps it track of everything on the back end. We kind of mentioned how a lot of times people don't want to have all their data out on the cloud and things. Mm-hmm. That it's nice for stuff like that, as well as it's open source. And it's kind of cool technology just to check out, because it's kind of cool to watch where people are clicking around.
Totally. And it can be very helpful for you in making decisions about UI or, you know, future improvements and things like that.
Yeah, one example is maybe, you know, Google Analytics can show you what links are people are traveling through your site and everything, but sometimes you might have like a link that looks like a link, but it's not, and people are trying to click in it, you know, and it's frustrating. You would never know that without something like this.
Yeah, and then you'll see that people are clicking there. You're like, that's not a link. And you're maybe I should fix that.
Yep. So that would be ClickHeat, and we'll give the link in the show notes.
Links in the show notes. It's kind of a weird one. All right, the next sort of follow-up we have, this comes from Rob Lund, who is a listener and a friend of ours, who said, we were talking about last episode, we were talking about support and how we are frustrated sometimes that, you know, they always sort of assume that you're not an expert, right? And they have to. They have to kind of cater to the lowest common denominator. And then, you know, DreamHost actually asks you when you submit a support ticket sort of what level you're at. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Oh, I can poke around. You know, I know what I'm doing. Or like, I master the universe sort of thing. And you can select those. So thank you, DreamHost, for...
They also have a priority thing, too, where it's like, oh, my God, things are crazy, breaking. Yeah. I need this fixed as soon as possible. Or like, yeah, fix it whenever you can.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice.
So that's good that they're asking those questions. What's even funnier is like, I can see that those probably just translate over to like fields in their,
probably
in
like
their problem tracker. That's
meaning.
Great. But that's a great idea, though, because it was kind of funny. It was like, oh, my. I was like, it was one of those. I was like, I have something not working, not the world's going to explode, but you know,
right.
Something is not working, not just I have a general question about something.
And it really helps you in the long run, because it, you know, they're going to give you a good detailed answer if you say you kind of know what you're doing, or if you don't know what you're doing, they're going to kind of guide you along instead of giving some cryptic message back.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Using terms. And I mean, you've seen this a lot with your support is trying to decipher what level these people you're supporting are at, you know.
Absolutely.
Do they know what an array is even? Yeah. And you would hope that when they bought your product, they would have looked at it enough to realize that they probably should figure out what that is. But a lot of times they don't. They just buy it and then they're like, I'm putting this in there, but it's not printing out a select button with all the options. And you're like, well, no, it's because it's returning an array, which is a programming object, which you should know about.
So then I'm like, well, you know, you just loop through it. And they're like, what?
Yeah, loop.
Are you familiar with like for each? No.
Ugh.
It's like, okay, well, anyways.
Oh, crud. That sucks. Okay, next item I want to talk about is it's iPad crazy time. Apple has released another product. It's actually out now. People are getting their hands on it.
Saturday was the day, which would be yesterday as of the recording of the podcast.
D-Day. It was Apple's version of D-Day. So, I mean, first of all, I just want to ask kind of what your thoughts on the iPad are.
I don't know. You know, I have an iPod Touch, and I think the iPad is basically just a giant version of that, so I can kind of imagine what it would be like, but I haven't had my hands on one. I did watch the demos at the conference that they had, back in January or whenever it was, or whenever it was. I don't know. It looks nice. I'm not probably going to get one, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what I think about it either. I agree with you. My iPod Touch has become obsolete since I've got an Android phone.
Definitely.
Because just as I think an iPod Touch becomes obsolete once you get an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Sort of the same thing. Because once now you have a device that does basically the same thing with internet connectivity all the time.
Which, yeah.
So definitely. I see a little more usefulness for the iPad because it is a different device. It is, you know. But I agree with you. I'm not sure if I buy one. I think it's one of those things that once you see one in person, it's definitely going to, you know, up the sort of want lust of it a little bit. But as it's, yeah, right now, I don't know. I don't think it's something that I'm clamoring to buy at. But
me personally, I think if I were to get one, my use case would be just couch surfing and, you know,
totally. Right.
Couch not surfing. Actually like writing an email or doing any work, just consuming the tech, you know.
Exactly. Consuming.
Kind of like the iPad, you know, but my Droid almost does that.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about like the whole reading thing, like reading books and stuff?
I don't do either. Audiobooks now.
I think I would like an e-ink display for reading. So I'm not sure what I think of another, even though Apple's displays in all their devices are always really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I really don't want the sort of, and plus I think what it's like 7 hours of battery life. And I, to me, like an e-reader, like the Kindle gets like
a week or something.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a little bit more. The one thing I think that is really cool is that Netflix released an iPad app so you can watch Netflix Watch It Now streams on the iPad. And I think that's a big shift.
That's going to be nice.
I think now it's sort of these devices have been somewhat crippled by there haven't been very many big players putting apps on these devices so that you can stream their video. And Netflix has been a big player in this market for a long time with things like the 360 app and you know, because you can watch on your TV now. It really brought video streaming, you know, really gave it a little bit more oomph. And now I think this is going to be a little bit even more of a game changer because a big player like Netflix is saying, all right, well, these devices, which they are saying they're going to come out with an iPhone and iPod Touch app later in the year, and who knows, eventually maybe, you know, Android, or it might proliferate to those. But I think that's a big deal. I think that's, you know, saying these mobile devices are, people want entertainment on the go, and it's not just music, you know, and it's not just videos that you have already on your thing, because that is a pain. I mean, every time I do travel and I get my Zune ready, I have to go find videos and I have to convert them if I didn't buy them from the Zune store. And, you know, those always is a pain in the butt, whereas if there was an app that I could just say, like, because you and I watch a lot of Netflix streaming movies, yeah, right? We're big fans of that. I think that's kind of a big shift, and I think it's going to really just jumpstart this even a little bit more into the mainstream.
Yeah, I think what's going to make or break the iPad is the apps that's going to follow. If they're going to come up with some creative, you know, unique things that we can't even imagine right now, and come up with a good use case. Right now, I don't think it's worth buying it from me personally if I'm just going to sit on the couch and use it as basically my netbook already does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a need for a reader at this point. Mm-hmm. But if there can be, you know, like the tablet PC, you know, a lot of times people bought that to take notes and things, and sometimes it was like, I don't know if I really use it.
I was a tablet PC guy back in the day when they were coming out for Windows.
If we see some cool apps, you know, like Netflix, but some more, you know, creative ones, it could, you know, catapult it in, and it could be a new device that we'll see other manufacturers making as well.
I think it's nice because it is easier to handle than a netbook, because it isn't a netbook. But it does bridge that gap between like the really small devices that are, you know, basically only mobile versions of websites. Where I want like a more full-featured computer-like device. I wish it would have been a full-featured computer, full-featured tablet, but then it wouldn't be as small, wouldn't be as cute, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I like that it's bridging that gap in that you have these tiny devices and you have, you know, a netbook. Even then, it's sometimes kind of a pain. To me, like, I like the form factor of the iPad a little bit better because I've been a tablet guy for a long time, but...
Mm-hmm.
I think there's no way it's going to break. You said make or break, and I don't think there's going to be a break. Since it's a common platform with the iPhone and iPod Touch, I don't think there's going to be any shift. I think it'll be a device that will be around.
I just saw a tweet that, you know, in the first day they sold 700,000. So
yeah,
the fans are getting them early, and it does look like it's going to be a success.
Yeah, I think once I see one, I'll be a little bit more convinced. But I'm kind of in the same boat as you right now. All right, the next thing that we want to talk about is this is an app we talked about a long time ago that I was a really big fan of, and it was called Social Thing.
Now, was that the one where you could post to your various social sites?
It did that as well, but it received. Basically, it gave you a unified sort of live stream where it would go grab your Facebook friends updates, it would go grab your Twitter friends updates, your MySpace friend updates, and put them in one spot. So,
okay.
You know, kind of like a lot of these apps, like the desktop apps like Twitterific and Seismic do now.
Okay.
But at the time, SocialThing was the only one doing it. It was in a beta. We got into it. We were really excited about it. And then basically they got bought by AOL and development on it just stopped. They said they're not going to fix any bugs. They're not going to add any new features. You can use the app if you want. And then for like me, it broke and it could never fix itself. So I kind of ditched it and I was really sad I liked it. But it's been relaunched now as AOL Livestream. So they actually did, you know, sort of reinvent it. So if you go to socialthing.com now, it redirects you to the AOL Livestream. It has the same features. It's a little more clunky now, though. It's definitely not, for me, it's not condensed enough. There's too many big pictures and icons and stuff, but it does exist. I was really sad when Social Thing died. It sort of reinvented to something I don't think I really like, but it's still out there. And that's really sort of the holy grail. I don't know if the Seismic web app does that. Do you know? Do you use Seismic?
I use a Seismic Twitter client on the Android platform. I don't think it does anything like that. But no.
Okay.
What do you think of AOL getting something like this?
Do you think they're just turning into this company that does AOL even? Like, I mean, I'm surprised to see that they're even pumping out anything new. I thought they had basically died. So I don't know.
Well, it'll be interesting. Because we liked SocialThing at the beginning, but like you said, it kind of died out.
Yeah, and I just wasn't happy about it being acquired by AOL. Sometimes I'm always conflicted with these companies that get bought out by someone because I think, well, if I had that product and they offered me that much money, I'd probably sell out too. But as a user, I'm always like, you should stick to your guns and just continue to develop independently because these big corporations do, like SocialThing, they took the team and had them work on other things. I don't think they were working on AOL Livestream when they first acquired them. I think they had them working on other social tools, which meant their core product of SocialThing was dead.
So they kind of hired them for the team and not as much as to develop the AOL live stream as they wanted it.
So that sucks. But at least the team is still alive and kicking, which is good. All right, so let's get into our geek tool of the week. This one is one of Mark and I's favorite tools. We both have one. It is the OXO Good Grips LiquiSeal Travel Mug. I could have sworn we talked about this on a previous episode, but we couldn't find it anywhere when searching around on the website. So we decided to highlight it again. This is a travel mug made by OXO, which is the company that makes great kitchen tools and stuff. I love OXO stuff. And it seals and has a button at the top that you push when you want to drink. So you can push the button and it's open and you can drink out of it and you can shut it. And then it's basically completely sealed. As in, you can take it and tip it upside down and, you know,
it's like an adult sippy cup.
It really is.
But it's insulated, so it keeps your coffee nice and mm-hmm. warm. And I have one, and you know, I hadn't been a coffee drinker for very long. It's probably only been a year or so since I entered the realm of coffee drinking. I only had one cup before that, but I absolutely love the OXO LiquiSeal, and I would buy another one if it broke or if I lost it or something. Yeah. It's great. Like literally, you can tip it upside down. Nothing spills or anything. You know, I'll click the thing and make sure there's nothing on the top or anything, and you just throw it.
Yeah, because sometimes if you shut it, there is like a little bit. There's like liquid still up in the lid of the cup.
But you don't really have to worry about it too much.
Yeah, the whole point is it's stopping from the catastrophic tip over. Like if I threw it on the floor, there may be a little bit of coffee that dribbles out of the top, but it's not going to sit and just dump the whole bit of coffee that it had inside of it out. It's only $10. You can get the link to buy it at the show notes. Other, you know, at Amazon, really good cups. I love them. It's $10. You'll never buy another travel mug ever again because this one does
cool stuff. Like you have like a laptop bag or something. You can stick it in the side pocket. You don't have to worry about the coffee sloshing out or anything.
Totally, I always do that. Yeah, and if you have half a cup of coffee, you can just click it shut, put it in your bag, and like you said, you can walk around. There's times where I've just thrown my bag on the floor when my cup was in it, not thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's like basically sitting upside down. And if it was any other cup, I would have had a big mess. Would have been terribly embarrassed, but
and you know they do make coffee cups that are supposed to not be spill and they're spill resistant or whatever, but these literally are like totally sealed once they're shut.
Yeah, and the other ones I've seen that totally seal are there. You have like usually like a screw mechanism on the top. This is really easy. It's just you click the little button up top and it's open, and then shut it and it's closed. So go get one if you like coffee. You know, it's a standard size that most places you take to get a cup of coffee, they charge you, what they normally would for like their medium size or whatever. I'm not sure how many ounces it is. That's a good question.
I don't know the coffee prices. Where I go, it's like 25 cents to fill it, but that's probably like on a low scale. Like,
yeah, you know, exactly. How many ounces?
I
want to
say
this thing?
Four cups. No, it can't be
No, four cups. Doesn't say how many ounces on the website. Weird. Anyways, I think it's like a 12 or 20 ounce at least around that size. Yep. So it's definitely enough to get you in the morning. You can get it. The OXO Good Grips Liquid Seal Cup. All right. Let's get into our web apps. The first web app that we want to talk about this week is called ProjectOiler.net. And it's spelled Euler, Project Euler, which is apparently Euler was a mathematician. I'm trying to remember. There was like a, I think he was the guy trying to do the traveling salesman problem or something like that. And he was a famous mathematician that had like a famous problem. And what Project Euler is a way for computer people, programmers like us, to go to that website, and they have a big list of fairly simple mathematical problems.
Okay.
So what's an example of, you know, one of the problems? So the first problem is, if we list all the natural numbers below 10 that are multiples of 3 or 5, we get 3, 5, 6, and 9. The sum of these multiples is 23. Find the sum of all the multiples of 3 or 5 below 1,000. So you log into the website. You can use any programming language you want, whatever you're comfortable with. There are some simple rules like, you know, the program has to run in under a minute. If it's taking more than a minute, you're doing it wrong. Like you'd have a very, 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 very inefficient algorithm. So you should probably, you know, refactor or figure out a different way to do it. But then you just go on the website, and if you find the answer, you type in what you think the answer is. It tells you if you did or not. And then you can sort of keep track of all these different questions. I think they add a new question once a week. There's already quite a backlog of them to do. So there's lots of fun. It's a good way, like, let's say if you want to learn a new programming language, like, oh man, I heard about Python. But I can never think of a project that I want to do in Python. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, go to Project Euler, grab a couple of these problems, do them in Python. You'll figure it out pretty easily.
And you'll increase your math skill.
Yeah.
So exactly. Do they post some of the code examples that have solved it usually? Or is it just like, yeah, because that could be kind of dangerous, I guess. So maybe they stay away from that.
What do you mean? I mean,
well, somebody could upload some malicious script or something if they did.
Maybe.
Yeah, but then there's
I don't know. I think there's like forums and stuff. Let me look at
it. Because it does say, like, I'm saying, here's one, add all natural numbers below 1,000 that are multiples of 3 or 5. That's the problem to solve. And it's been solved by 93,257 people.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if those people have to like upload it and somebody verifies it, or you just type in your answers.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a competition. There's no reward or anything like that. That's so it's just, if you cheat, you're just screwing yourself and you're an idiot, you know.
Of course.
And there are some people that are out there that like are in want to solve every problem just to make themselves feel good, so they go out and cheat and find all the answers and stuff. But you know, no, at the heart of it, it's just a way for you to get better at stuff and for you to challenge yourself and have fun and do some of these problems.
Yeah, I would definitely have to consult a math like site or book for some of these. Like, I forget some of this stuff. So
yeah, I mean, they see things like, even if you want to search the internet for, you know, how people have solved this problem in the past, so you implement it yourself in your own language.
That'd be
cool. That's fine. You can do that. The whole problem is there's no reward, not $1 million reward or anything like that. So just have fun with it and check out some of the problems. They're pretty easy and pretty fun.
It was kind of like that that website we reviewed that had all the different languages, all the different examples,
yeah,
and all the different languages.
Totally, yeah, like that. Only this, there are no examples. You have to figure it out yourself. Dum dum dum. But they're like little things. Like I saw a presentation on Haskell, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to play around with Haskell instead of just going to, you know, a couple hello worlds and maybe a loop where I print 1 to 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, why not work the brain, try and solve a problem?
That one we did earlier was Rosetta Code, just for anybody that wants to look it up. But yeah. Cool. If I'm ever just strapped for trying to figure out some, or, you know, like some problem to figure, you know, put in your program. Yeah.
Like if you just want to sharpen, let's say, I mean, you're just like, man, I haven't had a chance to really, you know, you've been doing too much, you know, MVC web work, yeah, where it's getting pretty redundant and you feel like you're losing your edge. Go grab some of these problems and try and figure out something hard and it'll be fun.
Cool.
All right. The next web app we want to talk about is called Plan Cruncher. And basically with Plan Cruncher, if you go to plancruncher.com, what it does is asks you some sort of questions about your business plan, and then gives you kind of this cool little iconized one-page summary of your business plan with, like, you know, big icons, so that if you did go up to someone trying to get funding or anything like that, you know, like we talk about, you should have an elevator pitch for your business, right? In case you never know when some guy who has a lot of money or, you know, kind of likes you says, well, what, I mean, what's that project? What is that business you're working on now? What it's like, you know, you have to keep that little elevator pitch ready so that in 5 minutes or less, you know, the distance of an elevator, of ride in an elevator with someone, you can pitch your business to them. This is basically the paper version of that. So even if you have less time, you can say, you know, here's kind of our situation, what we have, here's our business, mm-hmm. you know, here you go.
So, I mean, these icons that you're talking about are like ridiculously simple. Describe them. I mean, because go ahead and describe them.
Well, I mean, so like the one of the first questions it asked you is what kind of pitch do you have? You know, if you have an elevator pitch, it's like a little box with arrows to look like an elevator. Or if you only have like a longer pitch, it has like stairs, you know, yeah. you're taking the stairs. Some of them are like, oh, let me see here. I have to.
So basically, they're almost like a copyright symbol or something, like a, you know, like exactly. the creative left or, you know, like that you see on Flickr. You
yeah.
can kind of immediately distinguish what, you know, kind of copyright this image has. This is like a business plan. I guess the idea is you look at a business plan, you can basically see kind of what it's about in one page and
right.
just a couple glances.
Exactly. So like, and some of them, if you know, obviously if the icon isn't very, most of them have text descriptions after it too. So you kind of get this list of icons with text descriptions. Like if you go to, you know, page two, it's where it's asking about questions about the team. You know, like the first question is, or the first ones that you can sort of select is, tell us about the entrepreneur behind the business, right? Our founder is an ambitious entrepreneur who has a business savvy and persistence to build a company. And the other one you can check is, we have a business network and can get introduced to the right people. Mm-hmm. So those are, you know, kind of things that are helpful. And then below, it's like you can select one or the other. One is, we can build the product. Our chief technical officer is technical genius. Given time and money, we can deliver on our promises. Or it's, you know, we're not going to build this ourselves. We plan to either develop the team to build it or find someone to build it for us. Mm-hmm. Little things like that. Like if you're trying to pitch an idea to someone, they're going to want to know that. Like, are you building this product now? Or actually the next one is questions about the product. Like it asks, do you have just an idea, or do you have an idea with a tech demo, or do you have the full featured product? And there's icons for each of those. And it's a really quick one page summary of whatever your project you're working on. So that, like as a cover sheet or an index or something, if you want to hand out to people, pretty useful.
That would really, you know, make a plan really stand out, I think.
Yeah. And it's just oftentimes I think people really respect it. It sounds crappy, but people really respect when you don't waste their time. So having sort of a one page summary can help someone get clear details as to whether or not they want to like fund you or go into business with you. Unfortunately, that usually means that they are, you know, like they know that it's easier for them to decipher that they don't want to fund your project, mm-hmm. but you often don't get any credit for the fact that you save them a bunch of time.
Cool.
So, you know, time is money. Time's important. Save people some time. And anyways, it just looks cool too. I think it's kind of a cool, it gives you a PDF and you can attach it to whatever you want. So check it out at plancruncher.com. All right. So our topic this week is WordPress 3.0. So we're both big fans of WordPress.
Yep. Love it as a blog platform, CMS, whatever.
Yeah. I've been using it for quite some time now. I really like the team behind Automattic, the guys doing it. I think they're doing a really good job. And the next version of WordPress 3.0, or the next version of WordPress that's coming out, is 3. And it's kind of a big deal. They're doing a lot of changes. I think in the past, usually it's been things like cosmetic changes, like they added a new backend UI mm-hmm. and stuff. But this is one, 3.0 is kind of a big change towards different functionality in the platform itself.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, we're both big fans of WordPress. You know, I'm using WordPress for all kinds of things, you know,
yeah.
blogging, you know, you just did a project, which used WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people are using WordPress to kind of, you know, make any kind of website, not just a blog. You know, it's kind of just made this, it's just a great CMS. And I think we're going to talk about this, but I think in this next version of WordPress 3.0, they're really targeting that.
Yeah, it's definitely more of a shift in that direction that they, basically, it's been a blogging platform. I mean, it was made that as a blogging platform with a couple other features added to the side. People liked these other features. The product itself was really good, really stable.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, you know, so basically people have been hacking it for a long time to really try and make it a full-featured CMS.
Mm-hmm.
And I say full-featured, and that's kind of a bad term because other quote-unquote full-featured CMSs such as like Drupal and Joomla, I'm not a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. And this is why I've always liked WordPress as a CMS. But at the same time, if you were using it as a CMS, there's a lot of times you had to do hacks, you know, with different plugins or custom code mm-hmm. to make it really sort of function the way you want. And in 3.0, they're trying to sort of get away from that.
Get rid of the hacks and kind of build them in.
Yeah, I mean, once you start noticing that everybody is doing this hack or everybody is using this plugin, you kind of say, well, maybe it's time to start putting that into the core product, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For the record, there's... some work going on outside of my house right now that is very
giant
loud and squeaky
rat outside.
So I apologize for the noise.
So like one of the things they're doing to kind of move this towards a custom CMS, more full-featured CMS as it would be put, is custom post types.
Yes. So like a lot of times people use post for a lot of things. I personally kind of disagree with that. I don't like using post for everything. But it makes sense in a lot of things. Like, let's say you want to do reviews. Let's say you were using your blog, your WordPress installation for reviews and your general movie blog, right?
Okay.
So one would say that posts would be both reviews and just normal blog posts, right? They would be both. Well, with the new version, which is a plugin that's been out, there's been a plugin out for a while that allowed you to do custom post types and set templates for each post type.
Mm-hmm.
This functionality is basically doing that for you. You can set within the thing like this is this type of, you set within your template, I have these types of post types, and then you can set templates or interact with them programmatically some way, but WordPress does that for you instead of having to do it through a plugin like you did in the past.
So this way,
you know, if you subscribe to someone's RSS feed for that, you want both their movie post and their
mm-hmm.
You know, and that way they're both posts, so they get sent out and treated a lot the same as posts, but they are two different things, and you can decipher those in your template.
Okay. So, you know, in another way people did this was like categories. Like,
yeah, and that's
certain categories had different styling or something.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, you don't, so you can do that. The way WordPress is now, you can do this, but you have to do a lot of programming on the side. And the fact that they're integrating into the core platform means a lot less back-end programming that you have to hack around.
So, you know, basically all these hacks and things were to make a full-featured website as opposed to just a simple blogging platform.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
So this is one of those examples where they are definitely moving WordPress 3.0 towards a full-featured CMS.
Yep.
The next one is merging with WordPress MU. You had more experience with...
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is really more towards a move to a CMS. I think this is just more of a move to help get a consolidated code base to help people supporting both. WordPress MU stands for WordPress Multi-User, which was a way to create a blogging network. So with a normal WordPress blog, you can have multiple authors, but it's still the same blog. You can go to an author's page and see all their different stuff. But with WordPress MU, there are actually different blog installations, and you separate them either by through like a directory structure, like, you know, blog.jaderobbins.com/jadesblog or, you know, jadesblog.jaderobbins.com. You can do it through subdomains too, but they are separate blogs.
Was Blogger, or was it not Blogger, the WordPress.com, is that what they're using the MU?
Yeah, and that's what really, that's why they started building it, was because they wanted to make the WordPress.com network, and so they made this installation. And the code wasn't terribly different, but there are a couple little things that are fixed by this. Now with WordPress, if you use WordPress MU in the past, the pain was plugins, because plugins were designed primarily for WordPress. You had to either test them to see if they worked with WordPress MU, or you had to hack them to work with WordPress MU, because some of them just had, the way they were designed didn't work well with MU. And now that the code bases are merging, they're literally the same product. You don't have to worry about that anymore, because if your plugin works with WordPress 3.0, it works, you know, with WordPress MU too, because they're the same product now.
Mm-hmm. Another thing clients like to do especially is add and subtract things from their navigation.
Yeah.
So, you know, designers spend all this work making a nice navigation and hard coding it mm-hmm. in, and then the client says, well, I want to add this. And
well, yeah, so you'll be able to do the navigation from the back end now. And this definitely is a move more towards a CMS, because it used to be pages were just something that you added to your blog. Like if I need a page to my blog, and basically any function you do where you interact with pages, It tells you all the pages and all of its subpages, which doesn't work for navigation because oftentimes you have a lot of pages, but you don't really want them in the navigation. Mm-hmm. So you end up hard coding it or doing really big logic statements to say, you know, if this, if then only show these, you know, and that's kind of a pain. This way now there's going to be, you can programmatically ask WordPress what the navigation is and people can manage it in the back end. So they can have, you know, like a privacy policy page, but not have that show up in their navigation, or just like the way you did, like I did it in my last project was I just hard coded the addresses in, which
then the
customer cannot manage it at all. They have to contact me if they want to change any of it. So this is great. I'm glad to see this in the next version of WordPress.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those where it's moving WordPress more towards the CMS and allowing the client a little bit more control on what they can do with the navigation, which is nice. And get rid of some of those like huge if statement hard coded things that are very fragile.
Yeah. So the last big thing, there's a couple little things. But another really big one is called custom taxonomies. Now, and this confused me, and also I'm getting conflicting reports because I've seen that they've added custom taxonomies in previous versions of WordPress, but I think you had to code it in through your theme. You can't manage it from the front end. And so I had to look this up because I was like, what do you mean by taxonomies?
Yeah, that's exactly is this?
So a taxonomy is basically any sort of descriptive thing. Like categories and tags are technically taxonomies.
Okay.
So
a way to classify something, I guess.
Yeah, a way to classify something. Most taxonomies say that they have to be hierarchical. So, you know, categories kind of fit that. Tags don't. They're kind of like a single hierarchy taxonomy. But what they're allowing with WordPress now is you can, through the theme or through a plugin or whatever, add your own taxonomy. So like we were talking about earlier, let's say you had a site where you reviewed movies and CDs. This is sort of the classic example for custom taxonomies. For the post type of a movie, I'm going to want the taxonomies like director, actors, you know, but for the custom post type CD reviews, I'm going to want things like artist, genre, you know, those are taxonomies. That's way. And with the new custom taxonomy backend, you can do that through your theme or through a plugin. You can say, you know, this theme is a movie review theme. So this type movie review has the tax. You need to be able to add the taxonomies, director, you know, actors, things like that.
Well, that's really nice.
Yeah, so it really allows you to, along with custom post types, through the WordPress system, add, you know, classification, things like that, and the backend will take care of them for you. So if you say this type has these taxonomies, they actually show up in the new post window so that, you know, you don't have to do any of this custom field junk that you had to do in the past or any of these sort of workarounds and things like that.
So when do we get the access to this new cool WordPress 3.0?
Well, the beta is out now. The first beta is out now. You can install it and play around with it if you want to get the nightlies. You know, don't use it in production, obviously. Do it on a test and play around with it. Supposedly, May 1st is the launch date, which is something like WordCamp San Francisco, I think, is where they're trying to launch it. So it's coming up
soon, within a month or so.
Exactly. And there's a couple of little things that are coming out that'll make it more fun, such as they're adding the ability to support backgrounds now within your theme so that people can add their own backgrounds. This is very similar to another feature that was added in the previous version of WordPress that has really revolutionized it, which is built-in thumbnail support.
Which is
really good because it was a pain. I know you dealt with this with one of your blogs where you always had a custom field where you had the link to the thumbnail. Well, now in your theme, in your functions, you can set predefined thumbnail sizes. And whenever you upload an image, it automatically creates those thumbnails for you. And then you can just call that in your theme, like for your index page where you list this thumbnail. You can get rid of all that stuff. They're adding sort of that functionality now with backgrounds. So like if you have a theme and you say add custom background support, people can add their own background. So instead of you don't like the plain gray, you can set an image or...
And the default theme has changed now.
Yeah, exactly. The new
so
default
we don't
theme
have to look at Kubrick from like...
Exactly. And it looks really nice. And it looks like they're adding a lot of powerful... in that theme supports basically any of the new cool features of WordPress. So that's great for developers like us. We can go into that default theme and dig around and see what they did and implement it ourselves. So I think WordPress 3 is pretty cool. I think it's going to do a lot of cool stuff. I think it's basically going to help a lot of us get around a lot of the hacks that we've had to do to make it act more like a true CMS.
If it helps me stay away from Drupal or Joomla, I'm all for it. I really like WordPress.
Yeah, I really like WordPress. And I think for the majority of people, I think WordPress is a good light solution, whereas I think some of those other CMSs are very heavy-handed, and someone really has to know the system, whereas And with like WordPress 3, it's going to be really easy because you don't, before you would have to say like, okay, well, this is easier than Drupal or Joomla. You know, like, okay, add this custom field, you know, or install this plugin and it'll add this field. Now, you know, like the fact that it supports things like custom taxonomies, they're all done in the back end. It's really easy to teach people how to do it. You don't have to give them the hacks. So I think it's a good solution. That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. We have several different ways you can subscribe to the show. And if you want to leave feedback, let us know if you guys have any ideas for the show. You guys drive our content, so let us know if you have any ideas, thoughts, or anything by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We love to hear from you guys. Thank you, and we will see you next week.